be with you all tonight. It has been a year since I was here, isn't it? And it's been a lot. You know, when I think about going to India and all those that help us go to India, I realize that it's not just me, you know, that's going there. When I'm there, I actually think of those who are helping. And you are part of the work that I do. So don't think that we take you for granted. I tell the brethren over there to be thankful for those who help to make it possible. It's hard. I mean, if you think about the fact that it dawns on me every time. I mean, I'm aware of it very much because it takes about 20 hours or so, 22 hours to get there. This last time I flew through, landed at Dubai and had a layover in Dubai for about 3 hours, and then I flew on to Hyderabad. And you check your watch every time, you know, how much time has gone by. And you get to India, and India doesn't do like other countries do. It's 11 and a half hours ahead of us, not 11 hours. They didn't want to be like anybody else. It's a conscious thing that they did. They're proud of that. They don't want to be lumped into some system that Europeans or somebody else did. So they're very proud of the fact that they're like that and that they have that uniqueness about them. So are we doing good? Oh, please. Yeah, I'm fixing to do this. Everywhere I go, the system is a little bit different. So I'm sorry about the slow, not so smooth look at this. In this particular trip, this was this year. I always kind of get in my mind, I have to realize I haven't left this year yet. I was there in January, went in the middle part of January, about the 21st. And we go to a place that's called Hyderabad. It's a city of about 6 million. Lately, we've been going to Hyderabad instead of Bangalore. We go, which is a little further north in the southern part of India. And we go to Hyderabad, and Hyderabad is a mostly Islamic portion of India. It's almost 50% Muslim there, which the rest of the country is about 13% total. So there's a lot of mullahs and prayers being offered, you know, from the mosques that are in the town there. It's a technological town with lots of colleges and tech schools and that kind of thing. And I've enjoyed being there this last time especially. We stayed in a hotel on the last 3 days. And Joe and I did a lot of our work prepping to go in 2016 while we were there. It's a good time to do it because you got the brethren right there to ask them, what do you want us to do this next time and how can we do it and those kind of things. So we spent a good bit of time this time in Hyderabad. So we landed in Hyderabad and then we drove to a place called Mahabubnagar, which is to the northwest of there. And we had a week of classes in a place called Jedchurla. We've been to Jedchurla several times. Brother Dina Dal is the gospel preacher there. And the place, you know, India is a place where you kind of have to have compounds to get things done as headquarters for whatever you're doing. And the church there has a building with a big concrete block wall around it, probably 7 feet high. And in the middle of the yard of the church building there is a concrete block baptistry where they fill it up with the local water and they have lots of baptisms there. And so that's always remember that. And the fact that that church has elders, which is very rare. There's not very many, maybe just one other that I know of that I'm familiar with that has elders. We did 1 week of classes at Jedchurla. We also did 1 week of classes at a place called Kothakota. I'll show you pictures of these places in a minute. We had invited preachers from institutional churches of Christ to come, and our building there where we met was mostly from institutional churches. Then we went from Kothakota back to Hyderabad, and we flew to the coastal region about 400 miles east on the Sea of Bengal, on the Bay of Bengal. And that's where a vast number of faithful churches are. And I refer to it usually as the Guntur district, to the central sort of regional capital is a place called Guntur. And our brethren, you know, if we stay in a hotel in Guntur, which is a town of maybe 150,000, a small, bigger town over there, and all of the little villages that are around that, we drive out every day to those places and preach. We might preach in two different places. If we don't conduct a school in a central location that we've rented, and we, in those situations, we ahead of time. All the arrangements are made here long before we get over there, and the transportation for each man from everywhere that he live, that these men live, is paid for by us. The money we raise from different places, individuals and churches, goes to pay for the transportation of these men to us in central locations. We feed them and put them in place to sleep for 5 nights while they're there with us. And so they go through our classes that usually last from about 9 o'clock in the morning till about 5 p.m. We take an hour break in the middle of that. And Joe Price and I do all the teaching. And we have translators who translate in whatever appropriate language. This last trip, we actually had translation not just in Telugu, but in 3 different languages. In the north, it was Hindi and Sinthali, as well as Telugu, which is the language we're mostly using. In fact, I was going to do this. You ever heard the greeting in among Christians is Wanda Namalu, Wanda Namalu, and you put your hands up like this. They took the traditional Indian greeting, which is Namaskar Ram, and they changed it to mean when you greet someone in the name of God. So Wanda Namalu is what the Christians say. So we every time you see any of them, you do that. And when you leave, or when I get through preaching, they'll all do it to me sitting in their seats, Wanda Namalu. And it's just their custom in India. So in Vijayawada, this place that we went to, there's a military base there as well. Usually we drive over to Guntur, the city of Guntur, and stay there. And I like to go there every time I go to India. In fact, most of the people that, men that the church here and individuals are supporting live in that area and become real familiar with that particular area. We had 5 days of classes and preacher meetings there as well, and I met with, I think, all of the folks that y'all support during that time. And at the end of that, we flew back to Hyderabad. Hyderabad sort of is our hub. Went back to the big city of Hyderabad. 6 million people or so live there. And we flew north in the country, nearly as far north as you can go, to the capital, which is Delhi. It used to be called New Delhi. And everybody there refers to it as Delhi. They say Delhi. And so we connected to a smaller plane to a place called Bhadogra, and then got in a car and drove for 3 hours, nearly to the border with Nepal. And we had 2 classes there, and the people there were totally institutionally trained preachers, and they even had some orphans that live on the grounds of the church building there. And our job in teaching these institutional brethren who've asked us to come, that we go by invitation, they know that we're going to talk about scriptural authority for doing everything that you do. And they know that we're going to be talking about something and teaching them things that they don't understand, they don't believe. The difference between us is a curiosity to them. So what we do in these opportunities that we have is we take these people. I'd go to a Baptist church if they asked me to come and preach the gospel. I'd go anywhere where they'll let you preach what the Bible says. And these people will come to us. In this case, we went to them in their locale. And this church also, about 4 months ago, had a big windstorm through there, and it blew the roof off the very place that we were studying with them for a couple of days. And some brethren over here replaced that roof for them, which was a very kind thing that they greatly appreciated, I'm sure. And I'll see them, I think, this next year, too. Then in this trip, we repeated that route back to Hyderabad, which is a 16-hour trip to go up to this place called Purnia and go back to finally get back to Hyderabad and to work there on that trip for the trip preparation for the next trip in 2016. So we have our lessons ready. We have all of our things that need to be translated into 3 different languages for this next trip will be done while we're over here. And so this next trip will be my 7th trip. At the Jed Churla Church, the first place that we visited and spent a week there teaching different lessons, these are the men that were, all of these men are being supported there. I don't know that you all support, or somebody here supports Samuel Dimati, who is the tall man there with a nice bright smile. And he's got an MBA and speaks English very well. And his father is the man in the red sweater on the end, who is Dina Dow. All of these men are gospel preachers, and some of them are also, the men in all white are the elders of the church there who go out into the Hindu little villages around Jed Churla and sit down and tell Bible stories, and they convert people. They're very good at it. And the guy with the mustache, his name is Reuben, and he's a character, has a big He has one little thing in his nose, a little gold thing, and another one in the top of his ear, a little cuff thing, and he's got that mustache, and he's a real character. But he is known everywhere. They all love him in these areas, and I pick at him every time I come over there. This is the side of the building there. Everybody takes their shoes off to go in the building. These are the guys lining up to go in. And this is inside the building that these men are all studying as Joe and I, sit up at the front with our translators, and we have a PowerPoint that is powered by a small Kawasaki generator. The windows are open, and the men cook their food in the courtyard behind us. This time, it wasn't too bad about the smoke coming in, but we've had times when the power went out, we couldn't keep the generator going, so the PowerPoint went out, and we just, I said, when everything fails, just pick this up and teach. You have to know how to do that too. PowerPoint's nice, but there are times there's no electricity. So we do the best we can. These men are always very interested and treat us right. That's the entire group assembled outside. Somebody had been nice enough. I don't recall who did this, but somebody was nice enough to give us enough Bibles to hand each one of these men two Bibles each, and they went back home and gave them to the members of the church there. When we got through at Jadcherla, we went to this place called Kotha Kotha. I'd never been to Kotha Kotha. It's a hot, dry, dusty place with wild hogs running everywhere, dogs howling, children crying. You have to watch where you step, everywhere there. We were going over there, and they were telling us about Kotha Kotha. And they were having a national pride day where they had this 300-foot-long banner, and students were carrying it. And as we went along there, we went past this. There's a soldier standing there. Went past that and turned a corner, and everything had stopped, and the traffic stopped, and the street was full of people, and there was a hospital over on the left, I was told. And so we were sitting there for 20 or 30 minutes, and somebody said, "Why don't we find out what's going on? It just doesn't look like it's going to clear up." So one of the men that was with us got out, and he walked up to somebody, a policeman or someone in the group, and he came back, and he said, "Well, the people in the hospital are on strike. Two patients died without explanation, and they've dragged one of the bodies out, and it's in the middle of the road here, and they're stopping traffic until this thing is settled." And so in a little while, they took the dead body back into the hospital, and the police allowed us to go through. That's the kind of thing it's how you stop traffic in India and get stuff done. This is the building at Kotha Kotha. They haven't finished it. This is Joe here, you see, taking his shoes off, walking in. And so we taught inside the area. All the rest of it has not been finished, but it was clean and, decent inside, even though it doesn't look like it. And we spent a week in this place, came back there every day and preached and taught. And you can see in the corner, that's Joe there. In the corner back, you might not can see it, that's a baby sleeping that we had about four a good bit of the time. There was a weaver bird that had built a nest right over us, and you could look up and see the weaver birds flying in and out the whole time we were there. And they don't think anything about it, but it takes a little bit of adjustment for us to have the distractions that are involved in it. But we were well received there. The brethren are all liberal guys, but we were able, we know, to convince several of them of the truth, and they wanted to come back. This is the first week we do it. In our series, we have a basic series that's 1 week long, and then we have an advanced series usually due the next year. So they're waiting for us to come back and do the advanced series there. And several of them wanted to turn away from the fellowships that they're involved in, and that was a nice, reaction to the teaching that we're doing, that they saw it very quickly. Some are like that, some don't. That's Sam Damati standing right there translating for me in the lesson I was doing there. I was just talking to the elders about sometimes people will find it strange that the Indians like lots of bright lights and glittery things, and it's just their culture to do that, and we just step aside and go walk around it and all of those things. But it would be odd for us to do that, but it's not for them. That's just their way. And I don't mind that really at all. Of course, the whole time we were there, these ladies here in this picture fed us every day and were very sweet, kind, and considerate. They fed us Indian food, and you have to really make some adjustments for Indian food. You know, it's a different. There are different spices and that kind of thing than what we're used to. If you go to an Indian restaurant here in America, it's not anything like the food the folks in the countryside fix. It's just different. And that one night while we were there, this other picture on the side there is a place, a little meeting house, way out in the middle of nowhere. We went at night, so I don't know why we got there. You know, how the pathway there or the way home. But when we got there, there were about 100 people in the building when we got there. These are farming. You know, like 75% of the population works in the fields. The 25% of the population does everything else, including the high-tech stuff that's done in the high-tech cities like Bangalore and others. But in this place, these were country folks. All of these people were country people. And before it was over, there were probably 200 people inside and out in this place. It was hot and loud, you know, make a lot of noise. And so we both preached. I think we both preached about 45 minutes each. And as we were trying to, and I mean, when I walked down, I preached second. When I walked down into the crowd, they just swarmed me. And just wanted to shake my hand and to touch me and to be there. It was your gospel preacher, and you came all the way from America, and it's a hard to describe thing. I can say it, and unless you experience this, the appreciation that these people have is hard to describe. And I don't understand what they're saying, I'll ask one of the men who's a gospel preacher to translate for me what all this is about, and they say they just want to be close to somebody who is a gospel preacher. We got to the doors back there, and they had set up a little table, and one of the ladies in the village had brought a tray with teacups and tea and stuff, and we had to sit there and eat a couple of cookies and drink the tea before they would let us get in the car and go home. So that was just, I started trying to get up. No, you're sitting down. So it just, that's everywhere you go, they try to give you some tea, maybe some little tea and biscuit kind of treatment when you're there. But they're very kind people, just very rustic. This is the kind of food that those ladies fix for us every day, and it was just exceptional. The dish that is on at the bottom there is called biryani, and it's my favorite thing over there now. But usually get a lot of fruit, and my practice for years was not to eat the fruit. But if it's peeled out of something, you know, I'll eat the fruit. I don't eat the grapes ever. but the apples and oranges and things like that I'll eat. And this is the local preacher and his wife standing there in the front. That's Sam Damati again down there. He's eating. And you notice, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, maybe Bobby has or somebody else that's come here about that. You eat with your hands and you have a plate, these kind of plates that we had, have a little rim around the side, so as you pull the food toward you with your hands, the rim stops it, so you can put it in your mouth real quick, and actually you get proficient at eating that way when that's the only way to eat. And sometimes some brave soul will bring me a spoon, yes, thank you, and so that's finally some. These are some of the pigs. The whole time we were preaching, we were hearing oink, oink, oink outside, and getting a fight, and the tussle and tumble. And so, what in the world's going on out there? It's just some pigs, big deal. So, but the whole time. And the Hindus don't eat meat at all, and certainly the Muslims don't touch pork, but they get them up at some point and ship them somewhere, and somebody else eats them. This is my hotel room, and I thought people needed to see this. This is an old, because for a whole week, I stayed it was $12 a night for this fine establishment, and that was a double bed, and I took one of the mattresses and stacked it on the other one, and the mattresses are made of fiber and very hard, and so you put two of them, and it's slightly less hard if you put two together, so I slept on that thing. We had no running hot water. We did have Western commodes, which is a nice thing to have. I guarantee you don't want the other kind, but there's no shower. So a boy would bring a bucket, this bucket, with hot water in it every morning, and you had to have your bath in the morning. I'd rather have one at night before I get in the bed, but that's not the way it works. So, but they'd bring the hot water in the morning, and I didn't go anywhere till I had the good wash down with the hot water. Then somebody would go outside and bring us street food. Somebody would be making what they call breakfast, and it's wrapped in newspaper, tied with cotton string, and a bag, a little thin baggie full of the sauce. And these are two cups of coffee that are about 2 ounces each, and they drink one. I drink three if I can get it, you know. And I think that's very strange, but I even bring a 12-ounce cup with me and try to get them to fill it up, and halfway is about all I ever get it filled up. But we're Americans, and we have too much of everything, I think. Anyway, I tore this up. I'll show you the pictures of this opened up. This is how awful it looks. This is the traditional meal that they have for breakfast every morning, and it's a rice pancake, rice flour pancake with marsala in it. And it's rolled up like a burrito, and you just start eating it with they don't eat it like we do a burrito. They pick it with their hands and eat it that way. And the two little things at the bottom look like little donuts. They're made out of kind of a cornmeal thing. And you dip that in it's ground peanuts and chickpeas for the chutney that they call it. That's actually has all the protein. You have to eat the chutney because it's got all the protein in it. This is a picture there, still at Kota Kota. And we were handing out we have all of our lessons that we preach throughout the week printed. Joe has a book and I have a book each, and we hand those out to the men. If we have any Bibles at the end, on the last day on Friday of each week, we hand out Bibles too. And it's kind of an event, and everybody takes their picture getting it, shaking and gripping grins, I think is what they used to call it. When I was a journalist in the Air Force a long time ago, and that's what we called those. But at one of these days, I don't know which day this was, we baptized 5 people. And so we walked outside of town down a little road, and there was a bridge with deep enough water to baptize people. And I don't know how many people, 80 or 100 people showed up. Not all members of the church. They just want to watch what we're doing. And had me lead the prayer. When we got through with the week there, we flew from Hyderabad over to Vijayawada, that's on the coast of the Indian coast there of the Bay of Bengal. And Joe Price's wife Debbie joined us there. She has an adoption agency that's an international agency. She goes to Ethiopia and Romania and all kinds of places in India once in a while, and she happened to be able to work it to where she could come there and visit with a school there that had some orphans that were adoptable. And so she was with us at Vijayawada, and we worshiped in the little church there in Vijayawada. I didn't put all the pictures in here. I always take so many pictures, and it's boring to people. They don't know what I'm talking about, really. But these people in the other picture here, the little girl and the man on the end and this lady here in front, we ate in their home, which is across this little narrow, like an alleyway. It's really a street, but it's like 8 feet wide. And went into their home, and the room they lived in was about 10 foot by 10 foot with a little alcove with a gas stove in it. And they lived there. They rented this place and lived there. And so Joe and I sat on the bed, and they brought food to us. And there was about 15 people in there crowded with us. And so every bite you're eating, people are watching you eat. Oh, you get a little bit of, come forward and rub your, clean it up for you. And that's just India. Before a day is out, people have handled you all over throughout the day. It's just so crowded, you have to get used to that. And this is a good place to mention that we, in Guntur, which is a car ride away from about an hour away from Vijayawada, is an old friend of ours, a man smiling there, is the grandfather, proud grandfather of this baby. They had been waiting. Now, Joe did this year before last, a baby naming. It's a custom that they have in India. And they had been saving the naming of this child till I got there. Since Joe did one last time, they wanted me to do one this time. So this is his granddaughter. And she had a beautiful name. I can't remember the Indian version of it, but the translation in English was Beautiful Evening is her name. And that she was a sweet baby that she was quiet and easygoing. So they were proud for me to come and give her the name, the official name. Oh, but I wanted to say about that, the last time that I was there, I had a pullover, just a polo shirt on. It was hot, and I had gotten all sweaty, and my color was turned up, and I was, I was out of order, And they asked me to lead the prayer, because they'd fixed a nice supper in their home there. So I was leading the prayer, had my head down, I was bowing, and there were about 6 or 8 little teenage girls, all of them about that tall. And as soon as I started the prayer, little hands started straightening me up, fixing my collar, straightening me out, wiping the back of my neck. And to this day, I don't know who all did that, but it's India, so you go with it, you know. And just being helpful, trying to make the brother look better, you know. And but these two girls here are Lynn and Babu's daughters. The older one on the right there with the orange sash is Sujanya. Younger girl is Lawanya. And they're both brilliant girls. The younger girl has just this year been approved by the nation, the educational system, to put through all the way through university to become a medical doctor. She's real, real smart. And I think a lot of both of those girls, real sweet girls. And they're the kind who would, you know, straighten you out. They're the same. They weren't there, but they were the kind that would do it. And this is the church building from the preacher's point of view at Madala. We go to Madala every year. We're there. It's a small village. Children running around with nothing on below, just a little shirt and running around, no bottoms on. And dogs and everything running around. It's just incredible. And but when they open the doors to the church building, people come out. I mean, Hindu people come and listen to the preaching that goes on there. The brethren have a big sound system, and they sing and preach to the whole community all the time. And they are converting people hand over fist in this place. That I was telling the elders about this. Maybe we ought to do some of that singing publicly and let the neighbors around us hear what gospel songs sound like. And remember, Colossians 3:16 is actually the notion of singing is about teaching and admonishing. So I always think of Acts chapter 16 in the dungeon there, that after the you realize Paul and Silas were locked up in the stocks and they were singing in the dark the songs. And when the earthquake came and opened, it loosed their bonds, opened all the doors. The jailer came running in. He says, "What must I do to be saved?" Why did he ask that? Because everybody there had been listening to the songs they were singing about the gospel of Christ and the need that you're in sin and that you need to be saved. And so now, what is it that I do to be saved? And so the singing literally was preaching and teaching the gospel. So that's how important the messages are that we offer, not just comfortable songs for us to be happy about, to make us happy, but songs that actually teach the gospel. And these folks are doing that, and it's a New Testament practice, I think, that is worthy of constantly doing. There were, all in this area around Madala are fields everywhere. Everybody there is involved somehow in raising cotton, chili peppers, the various spices that are used in turmeric. You ought to see a field of turmeric growing. It looks like a potted plant from a greenhouse somewhere, but it's in all the dishes that you eat. And so they're just fields and fields of these things, these different crops, and irrigation ditches. And so baptisms are typically done in one of these that has made to be sort of a collecting point for the water. And this is Lynn and Babu, one of the brethren I've known from the very first, really fine person, who just grew up as a peasant himself. All he knew was the country life and working in the fields, and his wife does too. And even the two girls I was showing you, Lavanya and Sujanya, in the pepper season, every year when the community there, the fields, all their relatives and friends are raising all these peppers for the harvest, everybody shows up and they all go out and pick all the peppers and they pile them up. And even these college girls got out there and picked all the peppers and got dirty and everything while they were working and don't seem to mind that, just part of it. And the girls, all these little girls here are... in fact, the two in the front with the little outfits on, one of them is Vanilla, and the one that's smiling there, her name is Siri, like is on your telephone. That, you know, the name is an Indian name. So her name is Siri, and I've got a video of them singing to me. And I don't have it on here, but I've got it's probably on this drive that I brought with me. And they're really wonderful characters. This other picture here is us preaching in a congregation that is probably 20 miles away, so we drove over there. And the little building there, I was taking a picture of Joe and the others as they're coming out at one point. And we just preached in an afternoon there. And we rested up in the home of one of the folks that is there. If you'll notice in that door behind Joe, that's cotton piled up there. They had harvested their cotton. This is the cotton seed for next year's crop, and they store it in their house. And this little bed that Lynn and Babu is sitting on is the typical bed they all sleep on. It's just a really a a rack, you know, a cot that they sleep on, that are made by special bed makers. And I told Lennon, I said, I'll come to your house and stay at your house. He said, oh, brother, we don't have a bed for you. And then, well, okay, you know. So I'm out of the picture, I think, for staying in their house. But they were just very hospitable and kind there. And we went to another village that is with all the big speakers on top, and preached there for 4 hours, I think, the two of us. And at the end of that, four ladies came forward. And the total we had, I think, was 13 baptisms this time. And, you know, there was no big great effort to try to baptize a lot of people. It's just when we preached, there were those who, in some of the places, it responded. And we went out to a local creek there, and these ladies were, they ran the water buffaloes out, and they got in there and baptized the ladies. And, it, you know, you can, you know, after you preach for maybe a couple of hours, somebody will provide fruit and tea and the water for you. And so you go to their place and sit on, it's kind of like a porch. And as we're sitting there, people, the villagers are walking up and down the little roadway beside there. And if they see us, they'll ask permission of the people who live there if they can come in. And different ladies will bring their babies up for us to look at them. And, so this is the case here, these tiny little babies. You know, you'll ask, how old is your baby? And it's always a year older than you think. They're just small, you know. And this child here is about 2 years old, but I'd say 6 months. This is David Ratna Kumar right here. And when I first met him, he said, I'm David Kumar. And I said, well, and we've been emailing each other some, and I said, I know that you're supported by some of the brethren there at Bull Verde. And I said, David, how old are you? And he said, 56. I said, well, I'm 62 and a half, you know. And he's a tiny little man, very forward and bold in his teaching. And he works in a very primitive area that is, he had traveled to see us, to meet me. And he probably lives, I would guess, about 50 or 60 miles from there, way in the tribal area, where the government supports the people in the tribal area where there's wild animals and stuff. And they built a meeting hall there that is all made out of natural materials and thatch roof and everything. And he showed me a picture. I should have copied it. They showed me a picture of two dead cobras that they had pulled down out of the rafters of that place. And they were like 5 or 6 feet long, these cobras. And I said, well, you know, do you have cobras in the ceiling a lot? And he said, all the time, they're chasing the rats. So, okay. And okay, you can get really relaxed in a place like that. And so the last night that we were in Guntur, the villagers, these are all members of the church that are born and raised right there in Guntur. They fed us a wonderful supper. The two little girls, I had brought them two Snoopy dolls. I had a handful of them that I gave away to some of the kids, and they posed for the picture. And I mean, they're hot dogs, boy, when they take pictures. But they're bright kids, and you can't help but just love them. And so when we finished there, it was time for us to go to the north. And the last leg of our trip was the most tiring. It was a 16-hour trip to get up there, two planes and a car ride. We had a crazy, crazy Muslim driver. I didn't even show him, but you know, he was all over the road and driving fast and hitting every bump he could, and just in our honor, I think. But we, that 16 hours up there, spent 2 days up close to Nepal, and then we came back. And in this place, it's a very, I mean, I've seen poor places over there, but I believe this is the poorest. The church building and the attendant places where people live, the preacher and his family and maybe some other, and many other people actually, live in this compound of concrete block walls. They made the blocks themselves, and then they built the walls and the whole building themselves. And so this is the way you get into the church building, the place of worship. As you go in, to the right is this room on the right. And the preacher there had found seven starving boys. And they don't have this is not what you call an orphan home. He was just feeding these kids, and they were sleeping on the floor in the church building. And the mats are straw that they sleep on. And, you know, it's open to the nature around them. And so I walked through there, and all these kids were getting up, putting their clothes on and kicking the straw out of the way and all that kind of stuff. Over to in the front of that, we really can't see it there, but that is a hand pump well that they were successful in putting in. So all the water for the whole thing, I don't know how many people live in that compound, probably 40 or 50 or more. and all the water comes from that, and they're over to the right. I didn't take a picture of the toilets. There are two outhouses to the right of this, and that's the only outhouses, only facilities for all the people there to use. This on the right is where the preacher and his family and some other people live in there. And this is the man in, on the photograph on the left, the man at the very back, is Multi Rao is his name. Multi Lal is his name. And these are his kids and his wife, and we ate supper with them one night. And, you know, you want to accept the hospitality of these people, but when you're the only one eating and they're standing there watching, you go, man, I feel like a sorry outfit. What did they do to provide the food for me? And I don't know. But you know, we usually slip somebody some money before we leave because, you know, we just don't feel right about coming in. And these kids, these big kids here going to school and that kind of thing, not having supper, you know, so that we can eat. That's just ridiculous. This is me teaching one of the classes there, and we had... in fact, I don't know. I didn't put any more slides on it. I'm almost out of material here anyway. Every day of the two days that we were there, Multi Lal would stand up, with, and he had a beautiful baritone voice, and he's a tall man. He's probably 6'2", pretty tall for an Indian. And he would lead all the young men that were here, and there were probably 30 young men besides the older men who were sitting in the back. And they would sing a song in a language they call Sinthali. Or Sinthali, I guess it was TH. And it's a language in the north, and they never did write their own alphabet. So they write their language as it sounds phonetically in English. And so their songbooks and everything are written in English, but it's the Sinthali language. And he had a song that they led every morning that they all just belt out as loud as they can. And it's a haunting sound, but it's about leave the world and become a child of God. And I asked them to translate the main part of it, and that's what they told me, and I thought that was very impressive. Well, we returned after that. We flew, this was way up north, in the far north of India. We flew back down to the big city of Hyderabad one more time, and we ended up staying there for three full days because we had a little engagement that was canceled, and we said, wait a minute, instead of us just immediately changing our tickets and paying extra to change our tickets, let's stay here and do this work so that we're all here together and be prepared for 2016. We had never done that before. So the next trip, all of our material will be translated into Hindi and Telugu, and there's even some of it that's going to be translated into Sinthali, and we're buying Bibles for those folks in that language too. But they need a lot of work, the people in the north do. They need to be converted, and we haven't really fully done that. So we made progress with them, and we feel like that they will give up the institutional, realize that when they give up institutionalism, they give up the support that's coming from Nashville or Abilene or somewhere like that. So they have to live on their own support, which is just poor, terribly poor contribution from these local churches. Sometimes churches over here or individuals will send them some money for monthly support, and some of the very few, actually, when I start looking at the list, I know of about 50 men that I've been involved in that get support, but for those 50, there's probably 400 who don't get any support. So I think about all of that in connection to the work that's going on there, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for those who work without any support. I don't resent the money that those who do receive it get because they use it to the best of their ability, I do believe. And when we find somebody who's not honest about it, we root them out as quick as we can. Other brethren tell us so-and-so's not right or something's wrong about him. So we're able to the best of our ability, we want to have confidence that the ones who are being supported from brethren over here, that those who are doing that support understand that that they are faithful in the carrying out of their work as gospel preachers. So the work in India is expanding. We had 100 or so men receive training while we were over there this time, and we preached in about a dozen different congregations. So it was a full schedule, and a lot was done. And we intend this next time we're not going to go all the way to the north in Nepal. We'll be going up north, but we'll go to a place called Ranchi, where there's an airport, and we'll fly from Hyderabad to Ranchi, and over 100 of these people from the north are going to come there. And so we can fly out of there and come back to Hyderabad to make it more convenient for us and not those 16-hour one-way trips. But, you know, I think about the church here. The name Bull Verde is a known name over there. I want you to realize Bull Verde, it's an unusual name. And so they asked me what Bull Verde means, and I said, I'm not sure. And in Spanish, I know Verde means green, but I don't know what the bull part is. But Bull Verde is the name of this place. And I said, there's a fine church there that meets there. And there are other places I have to explain the names of those congregations too. They will just simply usually refer to the churches that they're members of as the village that the church building is in. So it's a place name very much like we do as well. And they know of you, and you are in their prayers. And it's not just because there's money coming from here, but the fact that they have benefited so much by your prayers. They know that the Lord has provided for them in some ways that they would never had the gospel brought to them. They would have never had the spiritual support that is provided by brethren such as you. So I want you to know that I appreciate your part in that very much, and there are others besides me that do that as well. Now, let me offer the invitation. I don't know what your condition is tonight as you have listened to this report, but we would be remiss if we didn't offer the invitation. The work that we're doing overseas is an important thing, absolutely. But let's not forget that our own country is in terrible spiritual shape. People are falling away in droves away from belief in God. The denominations are suffering worse than we are. We say, well, the Lord's church is dying. Let me tell you what, Baptists, Catholics, Lutherans, all of them are having terror. Methodists, all of the so-called traditional Protestant religions are suffering much worse, I'm sure, than we are, because they have been kind of teaching a secular doctrine anyway. And it is easily replaced. The gospel of Jesus Christ needs to be taught clearly with conviction by people who absolutely are convicted, believe that the truth is the Word of God, and that we should adhere to the Word of God, that we should live it, that we should, you know, remember that the Lord is our Father in heaven. And when He looks at our lives and we are reviewed for the eternal judgment, that He wants to see in us the behavior that is from Him. He is our Heavenly Father. He wants to see His traits in us. It's the family traits of godliness He wants to see in us. We're not His children if we don't portray His godliness, the actual traits of God. So in this physical world, we're supposed to be examples of what the perfection of heaven is. And so the life that we live, the example that we show to others is very, very important, that we never back away from the gospel, that we always are ready to give an answer when we are asked for anything. I always remember Acts chapter 8, and where the Ethiopian eunuch is joined by Philip, and where they study the Bible. The man has a question that he can't answer, remember, from Isaiah 53. And it says that Philip and he started at the same verse to answer his question. And it ended up with, I always think of the metonymy concept there, that Jesus, the word Jesus, and he taught it to him, Jesus. And then they came into a certain water, even though the passage there doesn't say anything about baptism or anything, they came to a certain water. The man said, well, see, here's water. What hinders me to be baptized? So in the word Jesus is the entire concept of the gospel. We need to have that readiness in our mind to be able to explain to people what the truth is and be ready to tell them what the concept of baptism for remission of sins is and why we're to do it. And to go forth into this world with that knowledge on the tip of our tongue, ready and prepared at any time to give those that ask for an answer. If you're one tonight who maybe fails it, you feel that you have failed in that, haven't done that often enough, haven't been ready, you're not alone. All of us, me, everybody, has done this from time to time. We have a precious secret, precious information that the lost of this world are hungering and dying to have. And we need to be the kind of people who recognize, yes, I can tell that little simple story. I can do that. I can answer these questions. And do your part, please, in our own beloved country here to bring people to Christ. Don't fail to be a good example to all around us. If you're a child of God tonight and you need to make acknowledgments, please feel free to do so at the singing of this song. There might be someone here that's not a Christian. If you're not a Christian, but you've been thinking, I believe that Jesus is the Son of God, why are you waiting on that? Why would you wait? So if you already believe that He's the Son of God, act upon your faith. Be with Him tonight. Have your sins washed away. And be one of us. I think of Acts chapter 9, verses 26 through 28, when the Apostle Paul was seen coming in and going out at Jerusalem. He was accepted there on the word of Barnabas to be a member of that local church. When you're a member of the church here at Bull Verde, seen coming in and going out, what does that mean? It means that you're a child of God. Be one tonight as together we stand and sing.